What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Yanks of the Cop. We are here for our last international break special. We're going to be touching on the Leicester game, but here with my main lads, Wahomie and Andrew, and we had to bring on a very special guest to close out the international break. You guys all know him, the legend himself, James Pearce. James, thank you so much for joining us, man. How are you tonight?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you. How are you guys? Okay?
Fantastic.
Safe and healthy so far. Hoping to keep that going.
Good, good. That's good.
Wish
to
I
hear.
Could say the same about our squad right now with all the injuries we've been having, but
I know if you're that fit and healthy, you might get a game on Sunday night.
Well, I was gonna ask you if Klopp's reached out to you. Yeah, I mean, we saw that performance you put on last time you played there. So
do you know what? I've had the phone next to me all day waiting for it to ring, and maybe he's got one digit saved down wrong or something.
Yeah. Still waiting. So. Because after watching that performance, it's like, how's this guy not gotten a call yet? So
I don't know what else I can do.
Maybe it's your press. Maybe your press is a little off.
Yeah, I'm definitely more. I'm built more for a low block than a high press.
Oh man, but yeah, we're really excited to jump into this one. You know, everyone who's watching, if you haven't already, go ahead and hit that like and subscribe button. We really appreciate you guys, but. There's been a lot of news around Liverpool before we even get to the Leicester game. You know, there's been a lot of developments around the Liverpool squad. And James, one of the things I wanted to kind of kick things off with is kind of the biggest news out there right now with us leaving Melwood. You know, we're obviously now going to the new training center. But, I mean, obviously Melwood played such a huge part in the history of Liverpool. So when you think about leaving there, you know, How much did Melwood influence the club, and what were some of your favorite moments at Melwood?
Yeah, I think it's real mixed emotions really with them moving, because I was fortunate to have a tour of the new training complex back in probably back end of January, early February, when they were just kind of starting to fit out the place internally, but you could. We were given a tour around by the contractors, and you know, you're blown away by just how impressive it was. And you know, I think that's why it's mixed emotions, because you know, as hard as it is to think that I won't ever go back to Melwood again, which you know, and bearing in mind I haven't walked through the doors of Melwood since March, because I think it would have been probably before the Bournemouth game, the press conference then, and you know, certainly I had no idea at that point what was about to hit in terms of the pandemic, and then obviously the fact that you know, would never get the chance to go back, because obviously since football resumed, they've been in their bubble and they've been very strict in terms of who can go in and out. So yeah, it's sad really. Just because I think it was just such an iconic place. I think, you know, I remember doing a tour of the place probably 10 years ago now with Ian Callaghan, and him talking about, you know, what it was like under Shankly there, and you know, and just, you know, it was just every time you walked through the gate to Melwood, you just felt like you were entering a place that was absolutely steeped in history. And you know, for a long, long time, it didn't really change. You know, I remember as a student in Liverpool, probably 96 to 99, going down to Melwood quite regularly. And you know, it was like an old building that, you know, it was so basic, really. It was only, you know, Houllier kind of dragged it kicking and screaming into this century with the new building that was put up. But in recent years, there was just always that, even probably before Klopp, there was this sense of it's going to happen, because it just wasn't big enough. That was the reality melt. And I think from very early on in Klopp's days, I think he was like, you know, especially as this place is, it's not actually, you know, suitable for what we need to do with how big, you know, backroom staffs have become when you've got data and analytics departments. And you know, even basic things like finding a room to have a meeting suddenly became a hassle, let alone having a big enough gym and you know, and everything else. So yeah, I've got some incredible memories really from, you know, from my early days becoming the Liverpool correspondent and going down there to kind of be properly introduced to Kenny Dalglish, to, you know, the times in there when I was in Brendan Rodgers' office, and you know, for a period I was able to go down there and see him one-to-one once a week, and then, you know, not as regular in that manager's office under Jurgen, but you know, still been in there a few times. And I think some of the player interviews I've done there over the years, when, you know, Steven Gerrard and Luis Suarez and Coutinho and people like that. So yeah, it's definitely progress, because I know how incredible the new facility is, but sadness at the same time.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so going on to the new training ground, the AXA's training center, what do you feel the new upgraded facility is going to bring to the team? And what do you think that it will kind of offer that Melwood really didn't offer the team in terms of moving us into the new generation of football for Liverpool? And how much of an impact is it going to be for Klopp to have the first from the youth team all under the same roof, which you never really had before compared to other teams?
Yeah, I think the first part of the question is size is certainly one element to it, in terms of, I think the gym now is three times bigger than the gym at Melwood, and it's just the sheer extent of the kind of sports science element of it, in terms of the facilities are just in a whole different league from the staff I've spoken to, and you know, just in terms of just the quality, I think all across the board is just better, in terms of, the number, it's just basic things as well, like I mentioned earlier about, meeting rooms and, the quarters for the players and the, because, so much of what Klopp does is kind of around encouraging players to spend as long as possible really at the Melwood base, what was the Melwood base, now the Kirby base, and be together for long chunks of the day, because it is so demanding playing for Klopp, and especially on those days when you've got double sessions and you've got hours to kill in between. It's really important at the elite end of football to have those absolute top-notch facilities. So I think that's certainly part of it. I know, even right down to things for, a special area for like Mona and Nema on the nutrition side, and for Lee Richardson and the sports psychologist side. So it's really kind of no stone unturned in terms of what they've created. There was feedback from James Milner and Jordan Henderson from the players' point of view. There was feedback from Klopp in terms of exactly what he wanted. And they did a lot of kind of trips all across Europe to look at, the absolute best facilities in European football.
Wow.
To try and cherry pick the best from what was around, to make sure that this was a facility that that will be kind of leading the way for years to come. And I think on the second part of the question, that's certainly a big thing for Klopp, the fact that he's bringing people together on one base, because, I think it was a source of frustration for him that it probably doesn't sound much, because I think it's probably only seven and a half miles between Melwood and Kirby, but that's still a fair distance when you're a very, very busy Premier League manager and you've got a packed diary and you might only have, a spare half an hour. And, of course, by the time you drive them to Kirby, it takes 15, 20 minutes. It's probably not worth your while. Where I think now, suddenly, if he's got that spare half an hour, 45 minutes, it's now a 2-minute walk just to go and watch an under 14 session or an under 12 session. And that's something that Klopp, I know, is really keen on. And I think also it's what it does for the younger players as well, because,
absolutely,
I know from speaking to Alex Inglethorpe about, the input that they've had is, the design is very much, geared towards, he wants the players, the younger players, to see the first team as, that is what I'm aspiring to. He wants those young players to see, Roberto Firmino and Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane out there, and hopefully it'll be a source of real inspiration for them. I think another probably, to a smaller extent, another element is it will give Klopp greater secrecy in terms of his preparations for matches, because I'm sure we've all seen at different times that details leak out on Twitter in terms of lineups, and of course it wasn't that long ago that Liverpool spent a fair amount of money putting in like a giant green curtain around the main pitch at Melwood to try and stop team news leaking out. But it's still the reality is that when you're in a built-up area like Melwood, you're going to get watched by people. That's just because there's so many people around, whilst, anyone that's been to the academy in Kirby will know it's much more secluded, it's much more private. Yeah, probably bad news for journalists, but there's probably a better chance of keeping things quiet.
And maybe bad news for Marcelo Bielsa.
Exactly. Well, there's plenty of hedges for him to hide in around there.
Yeah, true. I wanted to get into some football now. Obviously, we're all no strangers to the amount of injuries that Liverpool have been having. It seems like every time a player comes back, we have two more that hit the bench. So I'm just curious, how big of a concern do you think this is for Jurgen Klopp? And how big of a concern is it for you?
I think, yeah, it has to be a huge concern because I've just been absolutely decimated. And, you know, you just when you thought, I thought Liverpool had effectively weathered the storm in many ways because they did unbelievably well between, you know, the coming back after the last international break and, you know, of course, what happened with Van Dijk at Goodison. And then you feared in terms of, you know, oh, my God, what kind of impact will this have on Liverpool's season? And then I think they played seven games up to the current international break and what was it, 1-5 and drew two of them. And despite, you know, being without a lot of key personnel, and you thought, you know, actually, you know, we get players back and things will look a lot rosier after the, you know, the November internationals. But then, of course, you know, what happened with Joe Gomez on England duty seemed to, you know, almost, you know, one tale of woe after another, especially with, you know, Mo Salah contracting COVID as well while he was away with Egypt. So, yeah, I think, you know, what Jurgen Klopp's doing his press conference on Friday lunchtime, UK time. So hopefully we should know a bit more then in terms of exactly who's available for Sunday evening. But yeah, huge headache. I think probably obviously defensively more than anything else because, you know, Joe Gomez, I thought, had stepped up brilliantly in the absence of Van Dijk. And so to lose him, you know, it does leave Liverpool incredibly short in that department. You know, I really like Joel Matip. I don't think anyone doubts the quality of Joel Matip. The problem with him is the fact he doesn't stay fit for long enough. And you know, I think Liverpool got probably 10, 11 games before the window opens. And, you know, how many of them will Joel Matip play? You know, hopefully it'll be all of them, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it was only half of them. So, it is going to mean there's a fair bit of responsibility on the shoulders of young Reece Williams and Nat Phillips as well. I think they're both going to get game time over the coming weeks. And, you know, thankfully, I think Fabinho's pretty close now. So, you know, getting him back would be a big plus.
No, we actually completely agree. I mean, we're huge Joe Gomez guys. And, you know, one of the things that we kind of mentioned was this was his chance to shine. And he was shining bright. You know, one of the things that we said while he was playing next to Van Dijk was, you know, he can tend to be a little bit undisciplined with his positioning at times and some of his like leadership capabilities, but he has stepped up huge in his absence and just like he's really showing that he is one of, if not, the next best center back in the league behind Van Dijk, in my opinion. But when you think about all these injuries piling up, we know how difficult it is to play in Klopp's high intensity system and, you know, high intensity, you know, training sessions. You know, with everything going on with the condensed schedule, you know, if you were Klopp, you know, would you make any adjustments to, you know, how intense our training sessions are? Because like you said, you know, that's one of the things that we do, the double trainings and just how hard we practice.
Yeah, do you know what? I think, you know, Klopp has made changes this season. I don't, you know, it's certainly, I wouldn't put the injuries down to kind of just how intense training has been. I think, you know, if you ask the coaching staff or Klopp, he'll tell you that, you know, essentially because the schedule has been how it is, that it's mainly been rest and recovery between games. And, you know, there's been a bigger emphasis this season on video analysis because, you know, of course, you know, you can do that on recovery days without, you know, having to put players through, you know, tough physical sessions. So, no, I don't, you know, I've seen various kind of theories mentioned because, you know, I think in the last few years, we've been used to Liverpool actually, you know, having a very good record in terms of, you know, avoiding injuries and managing to keep key players fit during pivotal periods. But I just think they've had a huge amount of bad luck. The Virgil van Dijk one is, it, as we all know, was just a horrendous challenge from Pickford. You know, you can't, that's got, that one had nothing to do with the schedule. That was, I think at any point in anyone's career, that takes you out for a season, you know, when you suffer a challenge like that. I think probably the Gomez one, you know, I'm no medical expert, but I'm sure that was down to just the constant demands on him, I think, because you know, there had been he had played a lot of football in a short period of time. And so it's just been one thing after another, hasn't it, really, with you know, thankfully it looks like Robertson's okay. You know, that would have, you know, there was a time a few days ago where it looked like we might be without the entire first choice back four when he had a problem in his hamstring. So thankfully he's okay by the looks of things. And then obviously Trent is only, you know, relatively minor. That could have been worse. I think, you know, the word was that he'd be out 3 to 4 weeks, and obviously we've nearly had 2 weeks of that already. So hopefully we won't have to put up without Trent for too much longer.
James, how close do you think Oxlade-Chamberlain is to coming back?
Yeah, I mean, I think a few weeks before he's in a position where he's, you know, fully kind of up to speed in terms of, you know, he's been working in the gym and building it up slowly. But it's certainly taken a lot longer than Liverpool thought, because, yeah, you know, I think it was back end of August when he suffered the injury, and the word then was it was similar to what Henderson had done at the back end of last season.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, Henderson was back within 6-7 weeks, I think it was. So, you know, it has taken a lot longer. And, you know, yeah, I mean, Klopp hasn't been, you know, usually on most topics, Jürgen Klopp is very forthcoming and speaks what he thinks and all the rest of it. But, you know, increasingly I've noticed, I think with injuries, he does tend to keep his cards close to his chest. You know, I'm sure you guys noticed it as well when, you know, it's not for the want of trying in terms of asking where players are up to. And, you know, he can, you know, quite often he'll say, oh, I haven't spoke to the medical department yet, or we're not training till later, I don't know. And because, you know, like most people, I was expecting Thiago to be pushing for a return to action before now, because, you know, the club, you know, put out pictures of him doing some work with the rehab staff probably 3 weeks ago now, maybe even 4 weeks ago. And, you know, and usually that's a precursor to probably within a week being unleashed into full training. Now, clearly he's still suffering discomfort from that Richarlison challenge at Goodison. So it was a positive sign, the fact that Thiago and Fabinho were both in the pictures released today from the new complex in Kirby, although, you know, it should be said neither of them were actually full training. I think Fabinho was doing some work in the gym. So, getting those two back would just ease, I think, everyone's concerns, because, you know, Fabinho, you know, ideally, I don't really want to see him playing centre back, because I think he's the best holding midfielder in the league. But we do know that he can do an excellent job there.
Well, maybe you can ask him tomorrow at the press conference if you know, the Yanks of the Cop are curious if Thiago's going to be playing in the game on Sunday.
I'll do my best.
So James, so since Van Dijk went injured, I noticed obviously there was a change in us playing a deeper line. But with all the other injuries we're experiencing now, and let's say Thiago, Fabinho don't make Sunday, and maybe Henderson doesn't make Sunday, do you feel that we're going to need to see a change in style formation in terms of being able to do these injuries that were piling up?
Yeah, I think we will see a change of approach in a lot of games. I thought it was really interesting that Klopp went and played the front four, if you like, at the Etihad, because I honestly didn't think he would do that. I thought he would regard that as too much of a risk. But I do wonder whether he just thinks, in the absence of Van Dijk, whether Liverpool just aren't in a position to probably win games in the same way in which they have won games with Van Dijk, which is, as you said, you know, with a very high line. And also, I think we saw it a lot last season in the title winning season, that once Liverpool had gone ahead in games, they were so good at just taking the sting out of it and just being a bit streetwise and just, you know, lowering the tempo when needs be, and just, you know, almost like, you know, it's fine, you know, we're 1-0 up, or we're 2-0 up, or we're 2-1 up, that'll do us. We don't need to go chasing it. And I do think now that Klopp will think, well, actually, you know, with the greatest respect to who's going to be lining up in that back line on Sunday evening, I just don't think Liverpool will have a defence that will give him that kind of belief that you can just grind out a 1-0. I just think the best form of defence for Liverpool at the moment is going to be attack. You know, it was kind of a mixed bag, I thought, at the Etihad in terms of whether it worked. I thought Liverpool really caught City by surprise in terms of how they set up, and it probably took City half an hour to get to grips with it, by which point we could have easily been 2 or 3 up. It was just a shame we weren't clinical enough. And then, you know, I thought after that, especially second half, we were probably a little bit fortunate to get anything from it. So, yeah, I think we will see in general a change of approach, you know, whether that's playing, you know, Jota and the front three, or I think there will be games where we will actually still go back and play 4-3-3, especially when he gets a few midfielders back, you know, and hopefully, you know, within a few weeks, we'll see, you know, Thiago starting and Oxlade-Chamberlain a possibility, obviously Keita. Again, it's been a stop-start for him this season. I just don't think Liverpool without Van Dijk, and especially now with no Gomez as well, I'm not sure that we can win games in the same way as last season.
Yeah, James, I kind of want to keep it with Naby Keita. He's been quite the enigma for me. I mean, I know Jurgen Klopp obviously praised him when he came in. We've all saw his YouTube highlights when he was in the Bundesliga, and there's been many occasions when he's been with Liverpool that he's clearly impressed. He clearly has a talent, but it seems like injuries have kind of knocked him down here and there. I guess I'm just curious what your thoughts are on his future, obviously with the addition of Thiago, the performances this season of someone like Gini Wijnaldum and Jordan Henderson. It's going to be tough for him to get into this midfield with all these guys in there. I guess I'm just curious, do you think he can secure a place in that starting 11, or do you kind of just see him coming off the bench, or is it more dependent on who we play?
Yeah, I think just because of the nature of this season, I still think there will be a period, and hopefully it'll be an extent, you know, I hope for Naby Keita's sake, it's an extended period, but I'm sure there will be a period where he will become important to Liverpool. I just find it immensely frustrating that, you know, it feels like Groundhog Day with Keita. Like I lose count of how many times, you know, I've either written or talked about how, you know, he really needs to kick on, and, you know, yeah, we've seen flashes of it, but it's been so stop start, and, you know, that felt like the summation of his first season at Liverpool. It felt like the summation of his second season, and then it was like, you know, he just needs to stay fit. You know, he, I don't think anyone doubted his quality. I thought he finished last season really well. But it hasn't happened for him again. You know, it's and you do wonder whether, you know, it's not infinite, the patience that Klopp and the coaches are going to have, because, you know, let's not forget, he wasn't, you know, we're not talking about a Minamino that was brought in for £7 million and was, you know, brought in as a squad option and, you know, to give Liverpool a bit more depth. We're talking about a guy that was, you know, a big money signing, and you'd have to say, I think, the only big money signing that Klopp's made, who you'd say the jury was still out in terms of, you know, I think I always look at it and think, well, would you get more for a player than what you paid for him? And I'm not sure with Katie would do, because,
right.
And that's not, again, that's not really a reflection on how he performed when he has played. It's more how much football he's missed and the fact that Liverpool haven't been able to really rely on him. So you're right. I think with Thiago coming back, it's a bit of an uphill struggle for him, but I still think, because there's so many games, because the schedule's so crazy, he will get opportunities, and then it's down to him to take it and prove to Klopp that he should be part of Liverpool's long term future.
So, you know, going back to the defense, obviously center back's an issue. Like we said, like, I don't see Joel Matip playing more than one game a week just because of how injured he always gets. What are your thoughts on, you know, the center back market for January? Obviously, January, the prices are always jacked up. It's harder to make a deal. Do you think Liverpool have to now, with the situation we're in, do we have to go out and get a big name? And, you know, or is it going to be more of a stopgap? Because I think it seems to be the consensus that we have to do something.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think it's an absolute necessity that Liverpool go and strengthen there in January. I know the word from kind of the club stance at the moment is that, you know, they retain belief in the options that Klopp has still got, still standing, and that they're not kind of, you know, that their approach is that it's not nailed on by any stretch of the imagination, that they're going to have to do business in January. But, you know, I think part of that as well is not wanting to show your hand. We're still only in the middle of November, and and I also wonder whether Liverpool's hand might be forced by, you know, imagine if Joel Matip, as we said then, imagine if he did have another issue in the next 5 or 6 weeks. And I think that almost makes the conversation redundant in terms of whether Liverpool go and need to, you know, it almost suddenly becomes not can you afford to go and buy a top centre-back in January, almost can you afford not to, because of what's at stake with, you know, potentially a Premier League title and a Champions League on the line. So I thought after what happened with Van Dijk, I thought it was probably 50-50, because I thought traditionally, I know Liverpool obviously bought Van Dijk in January, but that was more to do with because they'd obviously, you know, made a hash of getting him the previous summer, that it was almost like they had to sit tight for 6 months. I think in general, Klopp, you know, doesn't really see the January window as a great opportunity to strengthen, because of, you know, what you said then about, you know, the inflated prices and also I think just be able to get players out of, you know, because of obviously the market that Liverpool are shopping in, you know, trying to convince other elite European clubs to part company with, you know, their gems or whatever. So, I mean, I'd be really surprised if Liverpool went down the route of a stopgap, because, you know, I think I just think why would you go and I think Klopp would rather give extra experience to someone like Reece Williams than go and sign someone who's probably not quite good enough, but is 7 or 8 years older and has played 200 games or things somewhere. Because I think, and also I think in the back of their head, they'd be thinking, well, it's difficult to sign someone knowing that you only really need them for 4 or 5 months until Van Dijk and Gomez are back. I think that's why I think if they do go and buy in January, it'll be someone for the next 4 or 5 years, because, you know, the reality is they didn't obviously replace Day and Lovren. And, you know, as well as Fabinho can play at centre-back, I think, as I said before, I think he's just a much better holding midfielder. So I think even without what had happened to Van Dijk and Gomez, you know, I thought it was a real gamble in the summer not bringing in another kind of main centre-half, especially with the schedule that Liverpool face and Matip's injury history. So, I think, you know, as cautious as Liverpool are being in terms of, you know, saying that, you know, that no, you know, we've got big faith in what we've got. And, you know, and I think that's true to a certain degree in terms of, you know, Nat Phillips and Reece Williams have, you know, deserved, you know, that faith and trust in terms they've repaid it with their performances so far. But I still think when January comes around, Liverpool will have to do business, just because I just think it's that important because of what's going to be at stake in the second half of the season.
Well, and the couple of guys that I've keep seeing us linked to is, you know, a guy, the center back from Salzburg or Leipzig, Upamecano, and then Kabak. But, you know, when you think about Upamecano, they're still right in the mix of it in the Champions League, so they're not going to want to let him walk. And then, you know, Kabak, he has a lot of talent. He's still only 20, and he's still pretty raw. So when you kind of look at the options, what's even out there for us to potentially go after?
Yeah, and I think that's probably another one of the reasons why Liverpool are cautious at the moment in terms of saying that, you know, as things stand, there are no guarantees they will go and get someone, because, you know, I think you're right. You know, it's not going to be easy to get up Upamecano in January. I know he's got a release clause, but that doesn't kick in, I understand, till next summer. So I think that would be a deal that would be much easier to do at the end of the season rather than midway through the season. I must admit, Kabak, I haven't seen, you know, too much about in terms of, can't really say, you know, whether that would be a good one or a bad one from my point of view. I think, you know, I really like Ben White at Brighton. But he's another one where I just think it'd be so different. You know, Leeds had about 3 or 4 pops at trying to sign him in the summer. And I think their final bid for Ben White was up around the £30 million mark. And I just look at it and I think, you know, as much as Liverpool really like him, and I know they heavily scouted him when he was at Leeds on the season-long loan, I just think there'll be better value than Ben White. If, you know, you're probably talking having to pay £40 million, £45 million for him. And I'm just not convinced that Liverpool would shell out that kind of cash for him. And, you know, and on the basis that I just think they'll find better value elsewhere, you know, probably in the Bundesliga.
So going on to, Leicester this weekend. Under Klopp, we've normally had quite a good record against Leicester. So looking at them so far this season, what do you feel their season's gone so far? I mean, obviously, I saw a stat as well that said that I think they scored 60% of their goals from penalties. So, and also, what do you feel are their threats going into this game that we need to be conscious of, especially with our, you know, we might have a changed team due to injuries?
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see how Brendan Rodgers approaches the game, because I know, you know, they turned over City, didn't they, earlier on this season, and I thought it was quite a clever performance from them in terms of, you know, they almost were quite happy for City to have probably 70-75% of the ball, and as we've seen from Leicester previously, they can be so dangerous on the counter attack. And yeah, you're right. You know, they have had a fair few penalties, but, you know, in saying that as well, I thought, you know, Vardy, you know, doesn't seem to, you know, ease off with the years that go by, and, you know, he's a threat. And they have got some real attacking talent in that team. You know, they played very well at Anfield last season when, of course, Liverpool needed that last gasp penalty from James Milner to win the game, and then, you know, it took probably Liverpool's best performance of the season, I thought, full stop, to beat them at the King Power on Boxing Day night so emphatically. So I think it's got the makings of a really, really, you know, good game. Because I think I'd be surprised if Rodgers set Leicester up to be too respectful, just because of the injuries that Liverpool have got. I think, you know, surely he will know that Leicester's best chance in this game is to try and get at Liverpool. You know, whoever is lining up in that makeshift back line, and of course, if they do that, then that is going to leave space for, you know, for Jota and Mane and Firmino. So yeah, I think certainly Leicester command a lot of respect, because, you know, they had a disastrous end to last season where I thought it almost slipped under the radar a little bit, just how bad they were in the last few months of last season, because, you know, certainly at one point they were kind of 10, 11 points clear of fifth place. And to end up not getting in the top four was, certainly financially for them, must have been an absolute disaster. So, I did wonder what would happen to Rodgers, you know, on the back of that, because you think certainly at Liverpool, you know, when Liverpool suffered real setbacks under Rodgers, it almost felt like things started to get away from him and he wasn't able to claw it back. But I think he's certainly a much better manager now than he was when he was at Liverpool. I think in terms of everything that comes with the job, and, you know, I think you've got to give him credit for how he's developed some really good young players there. They've made some decent signings, and this will be a tough game, definitely. And, you know, probably, not coming at an ideal time. I know Leicester have had injuries as well, actually. I know they've had a fair few missing, but you know, I did speak to someone down at Leicester today who said that a fair few of their injured ones had been back in full training in the last couple of days. So I think on that front, they're probably in a bit of a better shape than Liverpool.
Well, with that, James, how would you expect Jurgen Klopp to line up with this game in terms of an actual lineup, but also in a game strategy type of approach?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd imagine he would go back to 4-3-3. Would be my guess at this stage, just because obviously we know that there'll be no Mo Salah as he continues to self isolate due to COVID. So you'd imagine, you know, it makes sense for Jota to play in that front line with Mane and Firmino, and then I think it's probably difficult to call what he will go with, because I think so much of it will be led in the next kind of 24 to 48 hours by, you know, it's been interesting listening to Klopp this season about how much more he's probably talking to and listening to the sports science and medical guys in terms of looking at the data, you know, and trying to work out, you know, who is in the best possible physical shape for this one. You know, will we see Nico Williams at right back? I think, you know, he took a heavy blow to the foot playing for Wales the other day. So we're kind of waiting on him. You know, if he doesn't play right back in place of Trent, then you could well maybe see James Milner filling in at right back, which, you know, is solid enough defensively. But of course, you know, we all know that James Milner is as good as he is. And, you know, what a professional he is. He can't give Liverpool the attacking thrust that we're used to seeing down that side from Trent. And then, of course, you know, in the middle, you know, you've got, you know, Joel Matip, you know, who will be his centre-back partner. I think, you know, is Fabinho going to be ready? You know, we don't know is the reality at this point. And if he's not, then, of course, it's a toss-up between Nat Phillips and Reece Williams. And, you know, thankfully, obviously, Robertson, as we said before, is fit. And then, you know, midfield-wise, of course, waiting on Jordan Henderson. You know, the word certainly yesterday was that he was really touch and go for Sunday. You know, Wijnaldum played, you know, a fair amount of football away with the Netherlands, but, you know, thankfully he seems to be an absolute machine. So, you know, you'd expect to see him out there. You know, maybe this is a game for Keita. Maybe this is one to throw him into, and hopefully this might be the start of things changing for him. So, yeah, I think there's just so much up in the air at this point. And I think, you know, because, you know, I'm sure for Klopp, you know, he's obviously been saying a lot about the scheduling of matches. And I'm sure it's a massive relief to him that this is, you know, the late Sunday match, because, you know, it might be a bit of a weird kickoff for a lot of fans, probably especially in the UK. I think it's 7:15 kickoff on a Sunday night. But, you know, for Klopp, I think he'll have been delighted about that, because it does make a big difference compared to having the Saturday lunchtime slot when you've got players turning back up at the training ground from all around the world on the Thursday.
Yeah, another guy I kind of wanted to ask you about, James, and he's been a very interesting topic, I would say, for the season, and that's Bobby Firmino. You know, we on this show, we are a huge Bobby guys. You know, we support him. I think every single game we predict that he's going to score. Still waiting on that to happen for us. But when you look at his form, obviously, because he's not scoring the goals, you know, he's being, you know, obviously, you know, criticized by rival fans and also even some of the own Liverpool fans. You know, I think he does a lot of other things well, you know, the pressing, just his positioning, and just, you know, very unselfish player that we need when you have a guy like, you know, Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. But in your point of view, like, you know, he's had a good record against Leicester. I mean, how, you know, what's your opinion on his form? And do you think it's more of like he just kind of needs a little bit of a rest? Or, like, I mean, Jota's on fire right now. So, like, what are your thoughts on his performance so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of split in the middle, really, because, you know, obviously it seems to be the way with modern football that, you know, almost debates almost polarize opinion, don't they, in terms of some people go so far the other way in terms of defending from, you know, and other people will try and tell you that he's finished and that, you know, Liverpool need to replace him for good and all the rest of it. And I love Firmino. I'm like yourself in terms of, you know, I just think, you know, he's been so integral to everything Liverpool have achieved under Klopp. You know, it's no surprise he's played more football under Klopp than anyone else in the past 5 years. And I think, you know, Klopp talks about him being the engine of the Liverpool team because I just think with Firmino, which is where I think a lot of people, you know, probably non-Liverpool fans of other clubs and pundits as well, sometimes miss the point, is they do just look at the bottom line with Firmino in terms of the goal return and say, well, you know, he's not pulling his weight. And I think that just completely loses sight of the role that Klopp has got him doing in that Liverpool team. And he is such an unselfish team player, with the way that he drops off into space and links play and he creates space and opportunities for other people. But in saying that, I also think even those elements of his game have just lost a bit of an edge this season. And probably over the course of 2020, I'd say, like, I thought his contribution tailed off towards the back end of last season. And he still, he still makes a contribution every single game, but I just don't think it, it feels to me like it's been quite a while since he's like really lit up a game and and just, you know, with just those outrageous little flicks and tricks and the little passes into space that you just can't believe he's even seen. So, you know, I must admit, I would have advocated giving him a rest at the Etihad and playing Jota instead of him. Just because I think fatigue has to be an issue with Firmino when you've played the amount of football that he has the last few years and barely had a break. You know, it's no surprise that he's not absolutely sparkling. And I think, you know, obviously, probably for Klopp, it's gone out the window for the time being because of what's happened with Salah. But now he's got an elite front four rather than just an elite front three. It does give him the option of giving, you know, those attacking players a breather every now and again, which he probably didn't feel as if he could do last season because, you know, as much as we all love Divock Origi in terms of what he's done for the club, you know, the harsh reality is there was a big drop off in quality when, you know, if you didn't have one of the front three out there, whilst I think with Jota now, you know, it just, you know, the fact that he's so versatile, Jota can play across the front line. You know, I think that does give Klopp an option that he just didn't have before. So yeah, Firmino's still massively important for Liverpool, but I also think it's a fair debate to talk about whether he should start every game. And I think, and the reality is, I think probably the answer should be no.
So going on to Thiago, he's obviously been our potentially marquee signing of the summer. I've really probably seen like maybe under an hour and 45 minutes of him. But we all saw how good he was at Bayern Munich, especially in his past Champions League. What impact do you think he's going to have in this league when he gets a proper run of games? And how crucial do you feel he is going to be in terms of us retaining the title and even going really far in the Champions League as well? And then also, I think around the question, because we had Chris Williams on a couple of weeks back, and he was saying how he thinks that we might have to choose between the Premiership or the Champions League, and it might be difficult for us to win both due to the season and the injuries. And do you feel that going for both is realistic with us with all our injuries and how the season's going?
I think to take the last one first, I think he's right. I think it would be it's going to be incredibly difficult this season, just physically to be able to last the pace on both fronts in terms of the Premier League and the Champions League. I also think it's completely nonsensical to try and prioritise one over the other, because I just think, I think there's certainly we saw it last season with the Champions League where Liverpool actually played brilliantly, I thought, in that second leg against Atletico Madrid. And, you know, we're on the verge of what would have been a fantastic, really memorable victory. And then, you know, Adrian makes a horrendous mistake and bang, you're out. And, you know, and suddenly there's a lot of negativity where actually come away thinking, well, we actually played really well there. So I think just the whole format of the Champions League with the knockout, you know, where once you get into the knockout system, it's, you know, you are at the mercy of, you know, whether key personnel are fit and firing and whether you get a bit of luck on the night. So, I think it's almost impossible to try and win them both. You know, it's bad enough in a normal season, let alone in a season like this. So, you know, I think it's more likely to be one or the other. In terms of Thiago, I feel really sorry for him so far because, you know, you could tell from that first game at Chelsea how much he was absolutely loving, you know, having got the move that he'd hoped for all summer. And you know, certainly all the other players really, you know, took to him fast in terms of, you know, just fitted in really well. And then, you know, with COVID and then with the injury, he just hasn't been able to contribute since. But yeah, I still think he'll have a huge part to play this season. I thought when Liverpool signed him, I thought he'd be a really strong contender for kind of PFA Player of the Year, because I thought he is that much of an elite level player. Now, of course, you know, with time getting on a bit, you know, maybe that's a bit optimistic now with the football he's missed, but there's still an awful lot of football to come. I think, yeah, you only had to listen to Klopp and speak to people behind the scenes when Liverpool got that deal done to know how excited they are about the difference that Thiago will make going forward, because, you know, you it was a deal just completely out of keeping, really, with Liverpool's transfer policy under Klopp and under FSG. But, you know, the reality was, because, you know, Liverpool don't usually spend that kind of money and pay out that kind of wages for someone of his age. But then, you know, as someone said to me, you know, how often do you get the chance to sign someone of the caliber of Thiago Alcantara? So, yeah, I mean, they talk about him making Liverpool more unpredictable, which I think, you know, we've seen kind of little flashes of that. But I thought he was excellent in the derby at Goodison. And, you know, it just shows kind of how the fine margins of football, really, because I think if that ridiculous VAR decision doesn't go against Liverpool, then, you know, and also if Richarlison doesn't try and chop him in half, then we're probably still talking now about the quality of that pass. I think it was Thiago into Sadio Mane, wasn't it, in the build-up to Henderson's goal. And, you know, it's just a bit cruel in a way that because of that goal being chalked off, and then with the injury, obviously through no fault of his own, that, you know, he hasn't been able to feature whatsoever. But yeah, I still believe he'll have a massive part to play this season.
Just one question quickly. Is because of the, so obviously we were originally given a 6 week, 4 to 6 week forecast for Thiago in terms of the injury he had. Because it's also on his original knee where he had problems before at Bayern Munich, is there more concern over, like, a reoccurrence of that knee? Because why it's taken him so long, why he's been in, like, training for like 3 weeks?
Yeah, do you know what? I wish I knew the answer to that. No, I mean, when it first happened, there was a fair bit of concern. Obviously, you know, I think probably most of the talk was probably over Van Dijk off the weekend when we were waiting for news. And then, you know, when the news was confirmed that it was the worst with Van Dijk and it was the ACL, was the fact that Thiago was did any major kind of damage, and it wasn't one to majorly worry about. So I was expecting him to be back within kind of 3 to 4 weeks, to be honest. And then, like I said, you know, it looked at one point like that would be the case. With the fact that he was out on the grass at Melwood and doing sessions with the rehab staff. But, you know, clearly, you know, rather than be able to push on and be given the green light to step it up, he's obviously been feeling still a fair amount of discomfort, which is why that's stopped him from training so far. So, yeah, I'm just hoping when Jurgen Klopp does his press conference on Friday, there's some more positive news on him, because, you know, I can't give him a Liverpool shirt again.
Yeah, James, I just want to ask the last question here. Obviously, with Spurs playing City this weekend, our game against Leicester is very likely a must-win situation. What's your scoreline prediction for this match?
I think there'll certainly be goals. I think just the way that Liverpool will approach it. You know, and I think, like I said before, I'd be amazed if Rodgers set Leicester up just to frustrate, because surely he will know that Liverpool are going to be vulnerable defensively. So it's got the makings of a really, really entertaining game. So I still fancy Liverpool to just have a bit too much for them. But I'd say Liverpool 2, Leicester 1.
I like that. I was going to say 3-2, but I'll take 2-1.
I was going to say 2-1.
2-1 is Liverpool's favorite scoreline anyway. They always win by that.
I'd take 7-6, 8-7, anything.
Yeah, anything.
With the injuries, yeah, you take, just as long as you win.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, hey, James, thanks again for coming on, man. This has been an awesome conversation. We really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day. And you gave us a lot of good insight, so we definitely appreciate it.
No worries, guys. Nice chatting to you.
I would love to have you back on again sometime.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone out there, thanks again for listening. We'll be back for the post-match review. Go ahead and hit that like and subscribe button if you haven't yet. But otherwise, thanks again, James, and up the Reds, baby.
Reds.
Take care, everyone. Awesome.